looking to build a whole new major art center in Bend, for instance. So I'm excited to see what that might look like. They actually don't have anything there now, even though it's been, the population there has grown substantially in recent years. So they used to have the auditorium at Bend High School, but it unexpectedly had to be demolished last year because of it wasn't seismically sound, it wasn't structurally sound. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing all of the different expansion and growth plans that are in the works.
If our listeners are interested, where can they find out more about the stories that we talked about or generally about Oregon Arts Watch?
You can read all of the arts news at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org.
Laura, thank you so much for stopping by KB News in Depth today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Althea.
That was Laura Grimes, the Executive Director for Oregon Arts Watch, speaking with me about some of the latest stories to come out of that publication. More information is online at orartswatch.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea.
To KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive here on KBOO Radio. Tonight we're going to be talking about recent news events, in particular the aftermath of the recent presidential election and especially the executive orders that have been signed and how we should handle this going forward. Okay, so let's go around. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Sheila, and I use she, her pronouns also.
All right. Thank you for joining us. So, on his first day in office, President Trump signed several atrocious executive orders, some of which will notably affect trans, non-binary, and intersex people, such as ending funding for DEI programs in the government, and ordering federal agencies to use assigned sex in federal policies and documents rather than gender identity, with the only options being male or female. However, I want to note the wording of his executive order regarding gender has led to a funny error that would classify everyone as female, because the order stated to use the sex assigned at conception, and all human embryos originally start out as female. So I guess we're all women now. To clarify, I mean, all this order really means is that trans and non-binary people won't be able to list anything but their assigned sex on federal documents, and intersex people can only be listed as male or female. And that is concerning enough, don't get me wrong. But in the past few days, I've seen quite a few transphobes claiming that it's now illegal to be trans, and that being trans at all will have you thrown in jail. And I don't know where they're getting that information from, but that's not at all what that means. But could we be heading down that path, though? That is unfortunately a possibility in the future. And we talked a lot about the scary possible future for trans people on our episode about the trans genocide. And I mean, I've also seen a huge increase in just the past few days of transphobes openly talking about wanting to kill trans people because they feel safe to come out of the woodwork now. So what are your thoughts about all this? Emma and Sheila?
Oh, Sheila? Well, they're very involved, because the first question is, how do you square what if the changes have happened in birth certificates already? He can only speak for the federal government, but what if somebody appears in one way on all of their state identifications because they've gone through a legal name change? And what about people that are caught in between in that process? And how are you going to harmonize all these things? A lot of times, at least I've noticed when I'm doing some forms sometime, they say, we can't accept what you've just typed in because it doesn't fit our format. You have to answer every question, and you have to answer it so it all harmonizes. And if it doesn't harmonize, basically it doesn't go through. And since we're relying on so many electronic ways of looking at things now, I can see all kinds of mechanical difficulties emerging. And of course, the biggest problem, and the one that you just hit on, is this idea of how do you make a phenomenon disappear by simply declaring it doesn't exist? The growth in transgender acceptance has been largely led by the medical and psychiatric community that has recognized that this phenomenon of cross-gender identification exists, and they've worked that into their standards of care. And doctors have to adhere to standards of care if they're going to render professional services. If not, they're taking the risk that by disobeying that they open themselves to various malpractice claims that could be made against them. So, and then there are states that forbid conversion therapy. In other words, if you look at that whole process and watching what was going on while these signing statements were done, and the mere fact of the number done one right after the other, as though you were ordering something at a fast food restaurant and simply saying, here, sire, here, O kingship, here is something to be signed. And then he just signs it. And then what is this next one? Here, sire, here is this one. It deals with this topic. Sign it. There's no evidence that there were any policy guidelines to adopting these things. There's no process beyond simply, here it is, there it is. Here it is, there it is. Now, is that the way government runs? Is that how laws get made? There's no debate. There's no thought. They're just handed. And who was the handee? Who was actually going through this whole process of going and saying, here's the thing, here's the thing? It the whole thing had an aura about it of something out of the Middle Ages. And it's not well thought through. And of course, the most classic example of that was the elimination of birthright citizenship and the claim that, quote, everybody knows that we're the only country that has it. In point of fact, at least 30 other countries have this thing. And so it is built into the Constitution now because it's an amendment to the Constitution. So it's part of the Constitution now, and you can't just reverse that with an executive order. So all the things that we're witnessing and the way that it's being done is very, very similar to what went on with the phenomenon when Hitler came to power in 1933. Within 2 months, he had the Nuremberg Laws passed, which forbade Jewish people to have various jobs. It was the same equivalent. So it's when they want to kill you, they don't start with that. They start at some higher level, and they say, we will make you disappear in this category. You are no longer qualified for this particular place in society. And then you just squeeze that box narrower and narrower and narrower until finally it leads to something like Auschwitz. So it's very important to, as we mentioned in the previous broadcast, to recognize this phenomenon right off the bat. The difference, and I want to hit that when I get to talk again tonight, is that it's not just us this time. It's something so much broader affecting so many other relations of our nation that we're in something that even I did not see coming. And so that's what I wanted to say to start us off tonight.
Yeah, I'd like to start by just kind of reviewing some of the things that have happened since January 6th. So, to talk about how they're affecting us specifically as Oregonians, although I know that this program is also listened to outside of Oregon, but the president issued a very long, hard to read, executive order on the issue of gender identity, which was full of TERF language written by, you know, the kind of language that would have been very happily written by trans-excluding radical feminists or by the Heritage Foundation, and it's a lot of psychobabble, and it's a wish list. It's really a wish list. It's this piece of propaganda that doesn't have any constitutional merit. The executive branch does not get to decide what gender is, or when gender existed, or even these are decisions that are made by state governments, by individuals, these are decisions that are made by people, not by the executive branch. So it's a wish list, and it doesn't have very much weight in terms of its actual legal merit. But there are a few things that we really need to be concerned about that we already know are happening that the executive branch can do. The executive branch can immediately affect the status of transgender people who are incarcerated in federal facilities. And they have already taken that step. So they can affect those people in their lives. And what they're doing is they're basically saying that, that inmates, that, and they're not really going after trans masculine people. The vast majority of this executive memo is directed towards trans women or trans kids. And in the federal prisons, what they're saying is basically that we're going to follow the same process in the federal prisons that the state of Florida is following with how we treat transgender people. So if you haven't seen what's happening in Florida, transgender inmates are being forced to shave their heads, to turn in anything that is trans or trans related. And in some cases, they're even going through forced conversion therapy. So this is what people who are incarcerated in the state of Florida are facing in state prisons. And they're going to do something similar to this to our transgender sisters and brothers, but mostly sisters in federal prison. They're going to make trans women wear men's clothing. They're going to shave their heads. They're going to take away their hormones. And they're going to refer to them as he and him. If they're in a women's facility, they're going to take them out of a women's facility, even if they've already gone through almost any stage of transition, and they're going to put them in a men's prison where they face you know, the possibility of rape. So this is what the fact, but even that order is in direct conflict with PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act. And so even that one, where it seems like the president has immediate authority, he really doesn't, because it still faces constitutional challenges. Now, there's three areas that I want to talk about, and I don't want to take up too much time because I know we've all got stuff to say. So the second one is the issue of the transgender veterans. So, I mean, transgender service members. So we have about 12,000 transgender service members who are immediately facing dismissal or suspension from the military by the bill that was passed by under Biden, unfortunately, and it's also backed up by a presidential directive saying that transgender service members must be removed from the U.S. military. Now, this is the second time we've gone through this. The military has already responded saying, no, this is not, you know, this is not something that is effective. It's going to cost billions of dollars. It's going to face, you know, lawsuits from every angle. And it's also going to disrupt, you know, the camaraderie and the intention of our service members. So it's really going against the spirit of the military to do this. And so this is the second one where the president has, you know, some kind of authority. Now, the third one, the one that we really need to watch out for, is transgender people, including in Oregon, is that the president does have the ability to withdraw federal funding for programs like Medicare and Medicaid, which he's already indicated that they're supposed to do within 30 days. They're supposed to come up with a plan to end gender-affirming care that is funded by Medicare or Medicaid, and to, you know, to create some sort of retribution for health agencies that still continue to provide gender-affirming care who receive Medicare or Medicaid. And that's something that we could feel a direct impact on in Oregon. Again, though, this is also something that's going to be challenged in the courts at every level. And so it's important to know that even the first three that the president has the most direct authority over don't even potentially have any kind of merit to have any real standing, but they do in principle have some standing. So that's what I wanted to say. I'm going to stop now. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, both of you make some very good points. You know, it's true that an executive order can only do so much. It's not like the executive branch is very different from the legislative branch. It's not like this is being written into law. And in practice, it would be difficult to even execute such orders, because like you brought up, you know, what about people who've already changed their documents? Like, you know, just last year, I got my state ID, my gender marker changed to non-binary. And so that's one of the things I've been wondering. I'm like, well, can they like revoke my ID and make me change it back to female? How's that going to work? So especially with people who are going through gender affirming care, I'm worried about how they're going to be affected if their insurance can't cover it anymore. And I'm also wondering, at one point during his campaign, Trump was talking about making all gender-affirming care illegal. He hasn't done that yet, but it sounds like that's his goal at some point. So those are definitely concerns of mine. And yeah, like Emma pointed out, this is already affecting trans inmates, trans veterans. But yeah, I would like to hear your thoughts now, Sheila.
Okay, so here's my kind of overall assessment. One of the things that has always bothered me about the whole Trump phenomenon from the very beginning is I had to ask myself, is having Trump suddenly not the head of it, would that kill it? Would that be the end of Trumpism? And I came to the conclusion that no, that wouldn't do it. This
this sepsis has spread beyond the person who initiated it and is now firmly rooted in the body politic of this country. And the only way to get, just as if you had sepsis in your body, the only way to do that is, no matter what the point of origin is, you have to clean up the disease that is now in every tissue of your body and is rooted there. You do it with antibiotics. So I said, what is the equivalent of an antibiotic to dry up this sepsis that's now running through, breaking up families, including mine, breaking up people's relationships, friendships, things going overnight, so that no matter what else you shared in your life, once you fall into one or the other camps for or against Trump, suddenly determines absolutely everything in your life, your relationships, your ability to communicate with people, because sooner or later, issues that are as big as this are going to come up. And when they do, it causes a lot of trouble. So then I came to my second point, and I said, what is it that he was going after that touched me most intimately? And I said, well, he's touching who you are as a human being. And so I said, well, What does that mean? I said, well, if you're isolated, it makes it that much easier to come after you. But all of a sudden, instead of us, which is where I thought he would hit mostly, he came up with an agenda that first day that is so big, covers so many relationships all around the world, things that have massive quantities of money attached to it, things that are geopolitical that will break up treaty obligations that we owe. I'll give you just the first example that came to mind, this whole business of Greenland. Apparently, he actually got a hold of the head of government in Denmark and said, you need to surrender it to us, and you need to surrender it to us now. Basically along those lines. That's not necessarily a quotation. But it was very rude. It was very peremptory. It was not a negotiation. It wasn't something to say, first, we're going to have our ambassador meet with your ambassador, and we'd like to make a proposal, like if you were going to buy something. Try to imagine if you did this in real life. If you walked up and knocked on somebody's door and you said, your house is a beautiful house here, but I want it. And I've got a very big house next door to you, and I really, you kind of block my view. I'm probably going to just knock it down, but I want you to surrender it right now. Now, I could pay for it, but I'm not going to pay that much, because if you don't go along with this, I'm simply going to take it from you. What would we think about somebody like that? But essentially, this is what's going on, not only with Greenland, and therefore Denmark, that has a claim of 800 years standing for Greenland, but also Panama, also our neighbor to the north, our largest trading partner, Canada, and the second largest country by land in the world. And he doesn't even give the credibility to say, well, each province would be a separate state, like our teensy-weensy little Rhode Island. Instead, the whole thing becomes the 51st state. Now, what kind of language is this? And what happens to diplomacy and the whole point of having a Secretary of State? If the President says it, these things get devolved to the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State talks to the ambassador. The ambassador proposes it in a very genial fashion. That's the way things get done in the world. So this idea that you're going to re-engineer the entire world, break off our treaty obligations, just as an example, if by any chance they did invade Denmark is a member of the European Union, and there's a clause in the European Union that says that an attack on one is an attack of all. We would be at war with every member of the European Union overnight. Now, what kind of person does that? What are their chances of succeeding if they actually think they can get away with it? So one of the things, when I come back on my turn again, is to say, well, what do we do with something like that? But the first point that I want to say is that is so ungovernmental, so at variance with our institutions. And I said, well, how could you even come up with an idea like that? And this new thing, there's two key things that have come up recently, is the doctrine of that we have a right to whatever we need. And it was this manifest destiny idea, which was thought up, I think, by Horace Greeley, Go West, Young Man, Go West. It was this whole idea of America settling the West something you get from an old B Western, and then suddenly has become the guiding principle of our diplomacy. Absolutely insane. And so that's the first idea that's come up. The second idea has been the idea that somehow America, this is your hour. If you don't do it now, it'll never happen. And so China is making its move. Russia is making its move. We have to make our move to stay up with them. So if China, if Russia's going to push westward and China's going to push into Taiwan, that therefore we have to copy them, and we have to do the same thing and set up our own little giant North American block. And since we can see it coming, rather than resist these other imperialists, the idea is we're going to copy them. So that's what troubles me mostly. So that's what my second comment is tonight.
Now, just getting back to the issue of, you know, the rights of transgender folks and how the president's executive order is affecting some of those rights. When we went around a minute ago, I touched on three areas where it's going to affect people right away. There's three more that I wanted to mention that also are areas that are going to be, you know, transgender people could possibly be affected by almost immediately. The first one is the use of bathrooms. As you may remember, or you may have seen, Sarah McBride came under attack right away. Sarah McBride is the first openly transgender member of Congress. And one of the first things that the new House did was they passed, the Speaker of the House passed a resolution saying that Sarah McBride couldn't use the bathroom. So that was, like, you know, on the top of the agenda for House Republicans. But in addition to that, the president's executive order supposedly bars transgender people from using the bathroom in federal facilities. That includes, you know, the state capitol. It includes airports. It includes restrooms on the side of interstates. Anything that is a federal property, allegedly, transgender people can no longer use the bathroom. It'll be interesting to see what Oregon says about this, because, you know, that's in direct conflict with Oregon, with Oregon laws. And of course, all of these orders are in direct conflict with issues like the right to privacy. Transgender people have a right to privacy. And so you can't, you know, inspect somebody's body to see if they're transgender. If you do, you're violating their bodily autonomy. Issues about verification. So how do you prove that somebody's transgender? You know, I mean, and what happens when you arrest people? A lot of the issues with the bathroom ban. Are issues that we've done many shows about this. This is not new information. It's just, I mean, a lot of the stuff that you're seeing in Trump's executive order are basically like, you know, we've heard that song before. We fought that hill. We're just going to have to do it again. But anyways, that was one of them, was banning transgender people from using the bathroom in federal facilities. Another one is the issue of federal documents. Unfortunately, the issue of federal documents is something that the executive branch does have almost immediate control over. So if you're right in the middle of deciding that you want to apply for a passport, that's something that's done through an office, and it involves public records. And so it used to be that you could go into the Social Security office and say, oh, hey, I also changing your designation and Social Security documents. So it used to be you could go into a Social Security office just for the last few years and say, oh, I changed my gender. Here's my letter, or I'm just telling you I changed my gender, and they would change your gender for you. And now they're not allowing that. So that's going to be, an immediate impact with regard to records. And we've seen something, you know, a little bit more severe like this in the state of Texas, where Governor Abbott went to the DMV in Texas and told them to go back through the records and to find everybody who's ever changed their gender marker on their driver's license, to invalidate their driver's license and send them a new one with the gender marker that they had before. And that's what they did in Texas. Now, this is not the same thing that Trump did, but it's analogous. I mean, we're going to be in limbo for a little while on federal documents. So your passport and your Social Security are going to be the subjects of everything that has been put in that executive order is going to be contested by the ACLU, by Lambda Legal, by the states, and it's going to be in the courts. But this issue of federal documents really is an issue. So that's the second one. The third issue, of course, is the ongoing assault on transgender youth. So the executive order did instruct different agencies that serve schools and that serve health facilities that provide gender affirming care to transgender youth, various levels of orders telling them to stop providing service for transgender youth. And this is it's so many of the executive orders are just so vague and really unreadable that, you know, this part of the executive order, like, is not something that even is something that is actionable, because it's not really specific. I mean, the states are actually being a lot more vigorous in their assault on transgender youth, and they're being more specific in their assaults. And of course, we're fighting those. But the executive order was, to my recollection, vague and not really enforceable in any meaningful way with regard to gender-affirming care for trans youth, other than to condemn it. So that was what I wanted to say in my turn.
Nicolette?
Thank you, Emma. Yeah, it sounds like, a lot of what this order is proposing is not really enforceable right now. These sudden claims that, oh, being trans is illegal now, they are nowhere near at that point yet. But I can see how they are trying to get to that point. They are trying to erase us one way or another. And that's why I kind of want to maybe do sort of an update on our show about the trans genocide. And maybe put it into context with the current state of things. Because as we talked about on that show, a genocide isn't just overnight, all of a sudden, a bunch of people in this particular group are just killed off. That's not how it works. A genocide is a step-by-step process, and there are 10 stages to a genocide. We are getting closer and closer to the final step. And I think that these orders are pushing more and more in that direction. So that is something to be concerned about, even if it's not something we necessarily need to worry about right away.
What I'd like to do now for my segment is to say something about putting this in the widest possible context. The LGBT community has always been marginalized. And Emma Goldman, who was an early socialist leader in this country, was lesbian. And I've always admired Emma Goldman. And we have other heroes and heroines in our history that is good for all of us to know about. And what's really intriguing to me here is that there has been stuff like this before. In 1919, there were things called the Palmer Raids, and they were very, very powerful in terms of taking anyone that was a dissident. There was a real fear that the Russian Revolution would happen here. And what I noticed about this is that at times like that, various people, various resistance groups unite. They come to life if they've fallen into kind of a lethargy or started dividing amongst themselves. And the way they get fortified again is to be challenged. Just like your body gears up with a fever when you have a septic organism rampaging through your body. And this is, and I don't know how other to say this, this is so unprecedented what has just happened and the orders that are coming out, that whatever kind of sense of normality that we've had, I'm an older trans person, I've lived a long time, I've never seen anything like this ever. Nothing, not even during the Bush administration. Even there with the Americans, where we had things like renditions, where we would take people to Uzbekistan because they could be tortured there, or they could be tortured at Guantanamo, things like that. Even that pales compared to what we're talking about now. We're talking about turning all of America into Guantanamo. And not only that, but violating relationships that are some of the most sacred ones we have with our nearest neighbors, and with the NATO alliance, and with the European community, with our special relationship to England. All of these things are being held, and there's already been a legislative proposal to amend the Constitution so that Trump can serve a third term and by implication more terms of office. And of course, if you did it so that you said any president could do it, then that would include guys like Barack Obama, and they could run against him. But they want to change it so that it only counts to presidents that have had an interrupted term in between. There's only been one in American history, and that's Grover Cleveland. So the fact of the matter is, since you can't reincarnate him, it's a bill to amend the Constitution to let one single man run for office a third time, and by implication, be president for life. That's already out there. In the first week, it's out there. Now, it's not going to happen because you'd have to have the consent of 3/4 of the states. But the fact of the matter is that that is being put out there. So what is that telling me as an individual? It tells me that a hostile takeover has taken over. Now you say, but you know, he was officially elected to office. I say, yes, but he was officially elected to office and somewhat in a state of the a national coma, that we were asleep and didn't realize what we were doing. And so what I'm saying now is, and I'll set that up for my fourth point tonight, is what do we do when the country is in the process of what is essentially like a hostile takeover? You do a hostile takeover of a company, you buy stock, you elect a board of governors, and for the corporation, and then what you do is you dissolve the company, and then you simply sell off the assets bit by bit to the highest bidder. You just basically take the company apart. And essentially that was what that famous film Pretty Woman was about. He starts as a bad guy and ends up a good guy because his first intention is just to destroy a company and take it apart piece by piece and make a profit. I see that as going on right now. You can't get information back once you've given it away. If you put somebody in the White House and give them absolute security clearance so they can know absolutely anything, you can't get that knowledge back again. And you do it to somebody who is the richest man in the entire world, who can literally buy up governments in other countries and flood the states with funding for Republican candidates so that you pack even the state judiciaries. You can imagine how bad this could be. So my fourth thing will be, what do we do if a hostile takeover is taking place of a country and it's literally going to be sold off piece by piece to private parties?
Thank you. So again, getting back to specifically the president's order and how it's affecting the transgender community. I mean, I want to step away from the executive order for just a minute and talk about how transgender people are responding. Now, Nicolette touched on this a little bit at the beginning of the show, and I just kind of like to echo what Nicolette was saying, which is that, you know, transgender people are really terrified, right? And that's probably the main intention of both the, I mean, there's two intentions behind the executive order and the $250 million that was spent bashing transgender people during the election. It kind of has two purposes. The first purpose, and really the only, the only purpose, is to feed the hatred of the people who, you know, are Trump's base. So Trump, you know, there's a huge percentage of the population that's going to vote either Republican or Democrat. I mean, like 80-85% of the voters in either party are going to consistently stay loyal. They're going to vote for whoever the candidate is. So if you put up, you know, if you put up a candidate who, you know, is dubiously qualified, such as the president, they're still going to get 85% of the vote. But then there's another 15-20% who might swing left or swing right, depending on the, you know, where the wind is blowing. And, you know, those people are really, those people are either the swing voters or they're really far right, is really Trump's base. And for those people, those are the ones that he really used our transgender bodies as cannon fodder for his run for office. So it's a real minority of the American public, but it's a minority that he is interested in cultivating, because he knows that they're the people, along with the billionaires, who gave him power. So you know, that was the main intention. It doesn't have anything to do with us. We could have been, you know, I mean, we could have been some other category of people. We just happen to be a category that was convenient for him to extend, you know, this vast resources of the billionaire class, and these political lobby campaigns to strip all the hatred. So that, you know, that's one. The other side of it, though, is that the other intent is to terrorize us, and by terrorizing us, to make us less effective, to make us afraid, to make us hesitant, to basically scare transgender people back into the closet. And that's really the other side of the intention. And that's the side that really comes from more of the moral kind of right-wing fundamentalist side of the Republican Party. Those are the people who really, really do hate us. You know, these are the people we really need to watch out for. Those are the people that really hate us. They hate that we exist. And right now, I mean, for the last 4 years, to be honest, we had, and maybe we didn't talk about this enough, but we had the good graces of the Biden administration, who was using the powers of the executive office to extend us, you know, a little bit of a benefit, not much, but a little bit of something that recognized that, hey, we've got your back, and you know, we're there for you. And now it's basically the opposite. It's saying, we don't have your back. We're going to pull the rug out from under you, and we're going to dump all of this hate on you because we want to scare you and, you know, make you afraid of existing and of being yourself. And that's the part that's making what I'm seeing in the community is just outright panic. I mean, people are really afraid. They're afraid for their lives. They're afraid they're going to be sent to transgender concentration camps. I've heard people convinced that they're going to be arrested for walking down the street being transgender, you know, as if the American Constitution didn't exist. And it's the power of social media to give these ideas that are coming from the executive office. It's all the president has. I mean, he doesn't have anything backing him up. He's a weak, ineffectual man who isn't really fit for the job. He's a convicted criminal. And the last time he was president, he basically ended his administration with a pandemic that, you know, he didn't really have any control over. And, you know, we're just looking at the same situation now. We're going to have an ineffective 4 years where not much is going to happen. And he's really not going to accomplish almost any of his goals, because his goals are all, most of his goals are untenable. They're unconstitutional. A lot of them are illegal, and you know, he's a criminal himself. So he's really not going to get what he's trying to accomplish. But it is making transgender people very, very afraid and very concerned. And, you know, that's why we have to fight back and, you know, give people resources. I want to give people two resources that I'm really plugging every show now. One is to go to the website Erin in the Morning. It's E-R-I-N. Erin in the Morning. It's Erin Reed. She's a transgender journalist. And she writes stuff that's good enough to be published in the New York Times. And she actually does get referenced pretty regularly by the New York Times. And she's really an information powerhouse who's like collecting everything that's going on all around the country, letting us know everything that we need to know. I mean, she's a real gift to our community. And I would really encourage you to go look her up, Erin Reed, R-E-E-D, and follow her website, because she has new articles up every day tracking what's going on. She's got a great map that tells you everything that's going on legislatively in every state. So check her out. The other one is to check out the Transgender Legal Defense Guide. It's the Transgender Legal Resource Guide. And it tells you everything that you need to do to try to protect yourself, your documents, your loved ones, your property, the kind of steps that you need to take to, you know, try to protect yourself against this onslaught of hate legislation that's coming our way right now. So those are two resources I just thought I'd mention.
Nicola, I have you something, and then I want to do some closing stuff here.
Yeah. I guess some final thoughts that I have, or at least close to final, are that I do want people to remember that we can fight back. And no matter what they try to do to erase us, trans people will always exist. You know, I've been seeing these transphobes claim that, oh, trans people aren't going to exist anymore. The trans madness will finally be over. But trans people have existed for as long as humans have existed, because we know from many studies that we are born trans. And that's why we have documented trans people going back to hundreds of thousands of years ago, basically as long as, you know, human history, human recorded human history. So we always will exist. Even if they try to erase us, even if they try to kill us off, trans people will continue to be born. And that's why we need to focus on just trying to make a better future for future trans people, for future generations. And I think that is going to involve staying strong no matter what happens.
Well, here's what I would like to say. The history of resistance against things like this are always go back to people like Gandhi in India. They go back to Larry Kramer and the ACT UP movement that got attention to AIDS and that got drugs out there and kept the focus on our existence. And so one of the techniques that they used in ACT UP is this whole business of just going limp. And a limp body is a very heavy thing to move. And I thought, how could that be broadened into a state of not just letting your body go limp, but just providing a constant source of resistance everywhere you go, every conversation you have, every minute of the day, that you are constantly keeping that pressure up to say, if you're going to move us, you're going to have to move more than just us. And that's where the idea of bonding comes out. There's nothing harder to break than a secure bond. Even at the molecular level, if you try to break a bond in a molecule, it's very hard to pull one atom apart from another. And so it's very important that we learn how to make relationships with each other, relationships with other people, trans-friendly churches, and everybody in the world has a phone now with a little phone device where you can take pictures. If you see ICE people going around arresting people, and you see people crying, or you see children at schools crying because somebody has been yanked out, or you see anything else at your church, just out on the street, every single, just think of what happened with the George Floyd protests, from recording that, actually having visual evidence. it's very important that in resisting, we document everything that goes on, and then connect up. Show them what this looks like to do these things, because when you want to do cruel things, they always like to do it in the dark. They always like it to make it look very official, beautiful uniforms. We're just supporting the law. We're just trying to support our president. If the first part of my talk is correct, and this is a hostile takeover, and that this is something unprecedented, then we have to treat it that way, just like AIDS was something brand new, just like COVID was something brand new. This is a disease going on here. And the way to stop it is the way Larry Kramer said to stop it. Act up. And keep these three words in mind: resistance, insistence, and persistence. You resist something when you go limp, you create inertia to stop the process. You insist when you completely never give up on demanding your own rights, and you persist when you never ever stop doing it until this terrible period is over. So that's what my advice for all of us is. Don't just be a victim, though. Don't break any laws. Don't put yourself in a position where they can say, you were the violent one, you were the illegal one, you were the one out of line. Gandhi was huge on this. Make their hatred visible. And literally work it out. It's very similar to Aikido, where you use the opponent's force against them. You don't try to block it. You guide it into manifestation so people can see how ugly it is. If we do these techniques, I think we're going to not only prosper, but we'll be a stronger community in the end.
Thank you. So for my final words, I think that was a really good way to sort of close the show, Sheila. So I'm going to talk about something else for just a minute here with at the end of the show. I just wanted to let our listeners know that the producers of a play at Portland Community College called Orlando by Virginia Woolf, they have offered listeners of Transpositive a free ticket. So the first 10 people who get in contact with us via our email, which is transpositivepdx@gmail.com, will receive a complimentary ticket to Virginia Woolf's to Orlando by Virginia Woolf, adapted for the stage by Sarah Rule. And it's going to be showing at Portland Community College, Sylvania campus, March 6th to the 9th. So if you would like, they're doing this to show their support for the transgender community. So if you're listening and you'd like to go see this play you'd like a free ticket, just go ahead and send us an email at transpositivepdx@gmail.com.
That sounds cool. I went to PCC, so I'm glad they're showing their support. Does that apply to us hosts? Can we get free tickets? You don't have to answer that. I'm just saying that's really cool.
So final thoughts, Nicolette, and then if I could say one more thing.
Well, we've only got a couple minutes, but yeah, I think I've said just about everything I can say. I think that we are going to need to stand together. And just remember, no matter what they try, they cannot get rid of us. But go ahead, Sheila, what are your final thoughts?
But the point, of course, of all this is, what president in history, name even one, that has ever, ever merchandised, if we ever have to ask ourselves how we know this is an unprecedented thing, who has ever thought to leverage the presidency and even the Bible by putting his name on it as though he and God are in some sort of a joint venture operation? This idea of this spreading, when I talk about it as a spreading illness or sepsis, I'm not kidding. This is the evidence of it. You don't merchandise the presidency for private gain like this.
No, I agree. It's like the right wing has become a plague at this point. A plague that is taking over and killing this country. I think we should wrap this up.
Well, we have to smile once in a while because that's the only thing that's going to get us through. But it honestly is so ridiculous that Saturday
Saturday Night Live is having a problem because they can't make it more ridiculous than it actually is.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to Transpositive. Stay strong, have a good night, and we will talk to you next time. Good night.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing forward discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Every night and day, I hang my head and cry.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Trans Positive. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KABU Community Radio. Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing and I call it visibility. They call it coolness and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy. I call it finally free.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Join us at the